The Island Digest is a sampling of the stories in this week's Journal of the San Juans, Islands Sounder, and Islands Weekly, which are on newsstands now. The March 20th edition is brought to you by Orcas Center. I'm Caleb Summers. Headlines from the week of March 20th, 2024. Futures Lounge helps students prep for life after high school. Town and county debate water. Again. Opelco awarded Phase 1 funding to explore tidal generator. Plus, excerpts from the sheriff's log. First, from the Islands Sounder, Futures Lounge helps students prep for life after high school. By Kate Long. Now in our third year, the Room with the Couches is a place all Orcas Island High School and many middle school students are quite familiar with. Each Wednesday, students attend seminars where time and lessons are dedicated for each class to explore options and think about post-secondary plans. Freshmen and sophomores focus on what success looks like in high school. Hear from guest speakers, most recently Dr. Chris Wood and the Island House Dental Team, thank you, and learn how to explore their interests in clubs, volunteer opportunities, and summer plans. The stakes are a bit higher for juniors and seniors, especially as spring approaches for the graduating class. Upperclassmen take 2 field trips to tour college campuses in Seattle and Bellingham, and also visit companies like Aspen Power, Catamaran, or the Carpenters Training Center in Burlington. The class of 2024 spent their first high school year online during COVID, and it feels a bit like a mad dash getting them over the finish line. Still, we are posting acceptance letters on the College Board in the Commons every week, encouraging students to apply for state and national scholarships, helping them prep for college visits, and making pros and cons lists to select which program is the best fit. In addition, we support students who will enter the workforce directly with resume workshops and workplace research. May 1st is an exciting day when we will hang the Declaration banner in the Commons, signs created by each senior declaring their plan after graduation. The activities in the Futures Lounge are made possible by a grant from the Orcas Island Education Foundation and private donors. From the Journal of the San Juan Islands, Town and County Debate Water, Again, by Heather Spaulding. For the 100 years that the San Juan County Fair has existed, it has used some water from the town. At first, water was supplied largely for livestock during fair days, but the buildings, over time, have also housed a resident caretaker, a Boy Scout cabin, daycare, and more. The fairgrounds has grown and changed over time, and with the recent remodel, particularly that of the Mary Bow Building, an over-decades-long debate about how much and for what purpose the fair may use water resurfaced, and the town issued the county a notice of water shutoff on January 9th, citing lack of approved water use. The county is scheduled to appeal the notice during the town council meeting on March 21st at noon. I had a couple of staff people saying, you know, the fairgrounds isn't supposed to be expanding their water use, town administrator Denise Kulseth said. That prompted her to look at 2 documents, one from 1979, grandfathering in the use the fairgrounds had at that time, and a conditional use permit from 1992. The conditional use permit says, the town has stated that it will not provide additional water service to the site for domestic purposes. Water will be provided by the town on an as-needed basis for fire suppression. And the applicant has stated that the existing water service is adequate to meet the current and proposed domestic needs. The CUP also states that camping on the site is only allowed during the lease dates of major events and for no longer than 10 days. RV and tent camping, according to the permit, are restricted to the contracted dates of a major event, and new RV after electrical and sewer hookups shall be prohibited. The fair was to remove the existing administrative offices, which were, at that time, a trailer. It has been removed, and new offices were added to the new main building. The issue continued to be debated. In a 2001 memo itemizing topics for a joint meeting between town and county councils, town wastewater treatment is listed as a topic, saying, "Each time an exception is made, as was the case to provide limited water service to the fairgrounds, other interested parties seek to use these exceptions as a basis for equal treatment. The legal costs to defend our decisions can be enormous." Water usage was clearly not resolved during that joint meeting, as in an email between Town Administrator Duncan Wilson and Town Mayor Kerry Lacker dated June 30, 2013. Wilson wrote, "I had a meeting with Mike Thomas about the water issue at the fairgrounds. He was not aware of the restrictions, and I'm glad I caught him now because I think the county has a plan for building a park building on the site, and I told him that wouldn't be happening without authorization from the town. I had made several inquiries about their records on how they can use water and their slow use expansion over the years, and that we needed to make a plan for how to control this in the future. It was a good conversation." Still after that good conversation, fairgrounds water use was listed as a topic for adjoining town and county council meeting once again in October 2013. Less than a year later, July 2014, however, Town Code Enforcement Officer Serena Schumacher sent a notice to the fair to discontinue RV camping. Despite this, in 2016, County Manager Mike Thomas wrote Town Administrator Duncan Wilson, "Contrary to statements made, the county is very interested in increasing the number of allowable RV spaces at the fairgrounds. Capacity exists to add an additional 6 spaces." The increased utilization of the fairgrounds, including community programs as well as RV parking, has helped offset the costs of maintaining the buildings and grounds. Such costs would otherwise be recuperated by raising fare ticket costs. There are few small county or small town fairs that exist as nonprofits because fairs are not financially sustainable when run in that fashion. It takes a hit, even when run by volunteers. The reason you can do a fair is because you are doing spaghetti dinners, hosting all these other events throughout the year, as the fairgrounds has done for 100 years, Brandon Andrews, park and fair director, explained. "We can provide this space to Island Rec. They don't pay a whole lot to be here, but when they're here 5 nights a week with different programming, it helps contribute to what can happen here. We provide space for 4-H, we have wedding receptions, all these things that, while we are not booked out, all help little by little to be able to maintain the fairgrounds." Not helping matters, according to Andrews, an undetected 5- or 6-gallon leak was detected in April of last year. Last summer, the town installed an instantaneous reading meter as part of an effort to get a handle on leaks. When we looked at usage reports, we saw there was an anomaly and began to investigate. Unfortunately, it took about 5 months to identify the leak. Once it was identified, it was fixed in about 2 days, Andrews said. Since then, we have been able to use the reading meter to identify other leaks and fix them on a consistent basis. Andrews stated that even with the leaks, water usage has gone down. "The fairgrounds has reduced its overall water consumption by over 60%, he said. "Since the early 90s, when the 1992 conditional use permit was being pursued, records show we were using an average of about 73,000 gallons a month. Now, on average, we use between 13,000 to 15,000. Certainly, that goes higher in the summer months, when the fair occurs, or when we have the Pride Festival, or an event that caused a giant spike. But when you average it out over the course of the year, our consumption has gone down by over 60% over the last 30 years. He attributes that to a change in use, not having a caretaker or any full-time residential use, decommissioning old showers and bathrooms, and consolidating other water hookups. While remodeling and installing bathrooms they have, he said, kept water conservation in mind, replacing older model sinks and toilets, for example, with low-flow systems. We are working on getting rainwater collection up and going for more discretionary uses, such as flower watering, Andrews added. Kulseth, however, maintains that water use at the fairgrounds has increased with the slowly expanding fair. Her concern is for the bigger picture of continued growth and increased use of town water as water in the county becomes a scarcer resource. People think that because we are in the Pacific Northwest and it rains a lot, we cannot have a water issue, Kulseth said. However, the islands do have a limited amount of water. Some homeowners have had to deal with saltwater intrusion in their wells, for example. As the climate changes, these issues may only get worse. She also pointed out the cost of the town's water treatment plant, replacing filters, and the fact that the facility will need to add a fourth filter. According to Kulseth, the filter was originally budgeted at around $750,000, but is now anticipated to be close to $3 million. To resolve the issue, Kulseth has three suggestions. Annex the fairgrounds into the town, use portables during special large-scale events, or drill a well and disconnect from town water. Since the issue is not resolved, I would say that all those options and more remain on the table, Andrews said. I think we would identify them as not the most advantageous, both to the fairgrounds and, I think, even the town. The cost of putting in a well is going to exceed about $500,000 due to the depth, and then you have to account for your peak usage, which is the fair. So you have to put in a subdivision-sized water tower there to be able to serve that peak time. Between the infrastructure of drilling the well and maintaining the water system, that time is extraordinarily costly. Both using porta-potties at events and annexing into the town also have cons as well. But again, Andrews is not ruling anything out. I think there are ways to work with the town to have them provide oversight over new water connections without needing to be annexed into the town, and make sure that they are fully appraised of development at the fairgrounds, Andrews added. This idea, he hopes, gets to the nuts and bolts of the town's concerns without a costly or time-consuming resolution. We want to work with the town council, the mayor, and the staff of Friday Harbor. I think there is concern that an appeal is inherently contentious, and we would like to work to find ways to institutionalize their concerns in a way that is productive and addresses the town's concerns to reestablish better collaboration and coordination with our most trusted partner. We work best when we work together, and just want to make sure that we get back to that relationship as quickly and closely as possible. Opelco awarded Phase 1 funding to explore tidal generator. The U.S. Department of Energy's Water Power Technologies Office has competitively selected Opelco as one of two organizations to explore tidal energy development for what Opelco hopes will become the first tidal generation project in U.S. waters. The Opelco team will engage with stakeholders, conduct technical feasibility, and initiate preliminary permitting activities over the next 10 months. At the end of the grant term, only one of the two organizations will be funded to move forward with development of a full project. Opelco's proposed site is off Blakely Island in Rosario Strait. Opelco has completed initial grant-funded research for this project, including engagement with tribes and regulatory agencies, tidal flow studies, and environmental impacts. Opelco intends to partner with Orbital Marine in the Orkney Islands of Scotland to provide the tidal generator for the project. Their patented tidal generator machine has been in the water operating for 2 years under conditions very similar to our Salish Sea. Our exploration into tidal energy could help balance the local renewable generation and help keep the lights on when the sun goes down and the wind doesn't blow, said Opelco's general manager, Foster Hildreth. Two workshops on tidal energy were well attended by co-op members in 2023, and more sessions are planned for 2024. There will be an information table on tidal energy at Opelco's annual meeting, April 26th, 3 to 6 p.m. at the East Sound campus. Check Opelco's online calendar for other upcoming events as they develop. Reach out to tidal@opelco.com if you want to receive periodic updates on the project. There are no single or simple solutions for figuring out the complexities of our future energy supply. Opelco is exploring a variety of possible technologies to build reliable, sustainable, and carbon-free resources in San Juan County. Tidal energy is one of those technologies that could make sense for our island territory, but there are big hurdles to overcome, such as in-depth environmental studies, additional grant funding, and more. And now, choice excerpts from the San Juan County Sheriff's log. On March 6th, a Friday Harbor man called about the dismantling of a yurt on what was reported as his property. After deputies investigated the charge, they found no documentation to support the claim that the property belonged to the caller. It is currently a civil issue. On March 7th, a San Juan deputy received a call from a person who said their laptop and motorcycle were stolen. The situation was determined to be a civil matter and closed. On March 8th, deputies on Orcas responded to a report of a prowler on an unoccupied property under surveillance. Further investigation revealed the identity of the person, and deputies learned the person was searching for their lost dog. No crime occurred. Lopez deputies were dispatched to a non-injury accident after a vehicle was found in the ditch. The driver was not located, and a 72-hour notice was placed on the vehicle. On March 10th, on Orcas, a deputy responded to a possible burglary. After the video surveillance was collected and an investigation was completed, there appeared to be no evidence of a crime. On March 11th, in East Sound, deputies responded to a possible overdose. The person refused medical treatment and did not know why the reporting party had contacted emergency services. On March 12th, deputies on San Juan responded to a report of a missing person who, after borrowing a car, did not return home when they said they would. After the individual was located in the vehicle, it was then collected by the owner. And this concludes the March 20th edition of the Island Digest. This edition is brought to you by Orcas Center. Orcas Center is your place for fun and intrigue this spring with live concerts, performances, art openings, and more. To check out upcoming events and purchase tickets, visit orcascenter.org. Thank you for listening to the Island Digest, a small sampling of what's in your local print newspapers this week. The Journal, Sounder, and Weekly rely upon advertising, subscriptions, and donations to support our mission of high-quality community journalism. To contribute, visit our websites or email publisher Colleen Smith Summers at csmith@soundpublishing.com. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of the Island Digest, and come back next week for more local news from San Juan County, Washington. I'm Caleb Summers.